Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We've probably reached the stage where like all of the pre-NFL draft stories have now been written, and every player that could be kind of touted as kind of flying under the radar, virtually every name in the draft has been written that way. And conversely, every player thought to be at the top of the draft, you've seen the whispers and rumors why they may not be quite as good as you'd be led to believe that they are. At this point in time, every story has been written, and then the opposite of that take has also been given by somebody. And you probably take all of that with a grain of salt. However, I did see the other day there was a list of like, hey, here's some, I forget what even like the framing around this was, some names flying under the radar that might get the attention of some NFL teams and might go on to have bigger careers in the NFL than you might realize, whatever it was. And one of the names on the list was J.R. Reed. And I do think it's probably true. The former Georgia safety probably was underrated during his time at UGA. I mean, after all, he finished last year as like a first-team Associated Press All-American. Like, that's an incredible line to have on your resume. And I think it was a year for him in 2019 where his on-field contribution kind of matched what his off-field contribution probably already always was. Now, listen, JR was a good player at Georgia from the time he arrived, and there's a aspect of that that's sort of fascinating, just given the fact that he kind of came from Tulsa, not a ton of fanfare. It's has been sort of famously said a million times. He kind of was thought to be coming to Georgia as a package deal for D'Angelo Gibbs, a recruit who ultimately ended up making much of a name for himself at UGA and has since gone elsewhere. That's kind of what Reed's value to Georgia was initially viewed to be. And yet, from the very beginning, J.R. was just a good player. And as he became more and more involved in what George was doing on the field, he seemingly had also a huge, huge role as a very vocal leader for UGA. Every time he spoke, I was always amazed at how thoughtful he was. He just kind of came across as like a really sharp guy, but not just smart, kind of wise, maybe is the better way to say that, mature, just a super sharp dude all the way around. And so much the same way a lot of UGA players may impress NFL teams with their pre-draft interview skills, my guess is that J.R. Reed probably does pretty dadgum good in kind of a pre-draft interview. He just kind of comes across as a guy who has a certain level of with-itness, if you kind of get my drift on that. And obviously now he's gone from Georgia, and while you wish him well at the next level, you're sort of left to wonder, well, who's that guy going to be for Georgia this year? Who's going to have that same bass in his voice when he speaks to other players on the team and when he kind of propels the Georgia defense to be as good as it kind of can be? Well, with that in mind, I thought something that Jake Fromm said on Friday when he joined us as part of our virtual Dog Nation appreciation on video, he and Andrew Thomas, we did this yesterday with DeAndre Swift and Isaiah Wilson. But going back to Friday for a moment, on the subject of Georgia guys who could kind of step up in a leadership capacity for this upcoming season, I thought that Jake Fromm had something really interesting to say about that. Listen to your former Georgia quarterback on who he's got his eye on for this upcoming season.
I think one person everybody's forgetting about is Monty Rice. I don't know if I know a harder worker in the building than Monty Rice, and he's going to be special for that team. He's going to make a lot of plays, and I think he's going to play a big-time role in the league.
Listen to everything that Fromm says there, because I think it's all true. You know, Fromm says initially that Monty Rice is a guy that we forget about. I think at times he does get overlooked compared to other guys on the UGA roster. I think that's probably true. Certainly from a regional standpoint, those around SEC country, even fans who follow the league pretty closely, Monty Rice may not stand as one of the more famous players in the Georgia roster, but it's probably true he's among the most important. Now, how hard you're working behind the scenes, I don't have any way of knowing that for sure, because I'm not behind the scenes. I'm, in many cases on the outside looking in. But for Fromm, who is very much on the inside of all of this, for him to say that no one has worked harder than Monty Rice, based on the evidence that I see with my own eyes, I'm not surprised if that is indeed true. And when you think about a guy who's position on the field is incredibly important. I think that Monty Rice is probably Georgia's best run-stopping linebacker, and that's a very valuable commodity to have. When healthy, he's been huge for Georgia in that role, and when he hasn't been healthy, Georgia's really suffered because of that. So on the field, we know that Monty Rice brings a lot to the table, but let me focus in on the other part of this for a moment. That sort of J.R. Reed-style leadership, that kind of wisdom born out of maturity. That's, I think, an important aspect for any defense in any year, maybe especially for the Georgia defense this year because of how high the expectations are. There have already been sort of the hype machine folks out there calling this the best defense in college football or the best defense of all time or the best whatever. For the most part, we're kind of allergic to that level of hype on this show. But nonetheless, no matter how you slice it up, it is a very good Georgia defense, and the expectations on paper will be really high, and that means leadership's the most important. Now, I want to give you a couple of examples of how Monty Rice has kind of shown that leadership for Georgia over the last year or so. And I think you can also kind of extrapolate from that what Rice is going to be able to provide even more of now that he's a year older in 2020. I'm going to give you one example from after a win and one example from after a loss. And I think both of these tell kind of a slightly different tale on Monty Rice. Let me start after the Texas A&M game in which Georgia's defense had to hold on one more time like they did a lot this season, get that big stop to preserve the win. How did it feel after the game was over? What Monty Rice said then I think also has some meaning for us heading into 2020 as well. Here is the Georgia linebacker.
When you sign your scholarship to play in this league, you know, you signed up for games like that. We know especially the game ain't ever over until it's over. You know, that was a good finish by the defense, you know, gave up some plays there at the end, but, you know, we put a stop to it quick. Tyler Clark, you know, with the sack, that's big right there, you know. I think they even knocked him out of field goal range with that sack. He executed his call, you know, and he went and made a play.
It's really the first part of that statement that kind of jumps out to me more than anything else. He says, I love the way he said it. He says it better than I'm going to repeat it, that when you sign up to be in the SEC, those are the kinds of games you sign up for. And I guess my sense of what I understand about Monty in the middle of that linebacking corps for Georgia, that's, I guess, kind of the way that I experience Monty Rice as a player. He just kind of comes across as a dude that knows what he signed up for and knows that it's not going to be easy and sometimes it's not going to be pretty. And for a guy like Monty Rice, who does a lot of dirty work for the Georgia defense, and I mean that in a complimentary sense, he's not playing dirty, he's just doing the dirty work. For a guy like that, for Georgia, maybe you don't always get the pats on the back and maybe your name doesn't show up on ESPN quite as much as you want it to, but this is the job he signed up for, and it seems like he kind of goes out there and does his job. Jake Fromm says nobody works harder. On the field, we can certainly see some evidence that would suggest that's true. And in terms of the work that he does being underappreciated, Fromm alluded to that. I think we could kind of say that there as well. And yet you don't hear Monty Rice whining and complaining about that. He's just out there to do a job. And the way in which he does his job is not just leadership by example, but also the vocal leadership that he seems to have, I think is going to be the kind of thing that Georgia also gets a lot from this upcoming season as well. Let me give you another example of this, and this is after a loss. And, you know, look, it was a very good year for the Georgia defense in 2019 with one exception, what happened against LSU when Joe Burrow, like he did against so many teams, really ran wild and throwing the ball all over the yard and just not a good day for the Georgia defense that day. Now, LSU is a load to deal with, but in talking to Monty Rice about what the takeaway from that is and going into the Sugar Bowl, where Rice spoke these words to me was in New Orleans after the Sugar Bowl, how important was it for them to kind of go back out and kind of get some retribution as a defense, something that Georgia did against Baylor in the Superdome? How important was that after what had happened against LSU? And once again, that leadership quotient that Rice brings to the table, I think, is evident in this quote. Here's what the Georgia linebacker told me going back to New Orleans in January.
I don't really listen to what people got to say because at the end of the day, they're not the one going out there practicing. They're not the one with two casts on their hand, with injuries, you know, sprained wrist. It's not, you know, they're not out there banging with us. They just talking. So, I mean, they can talk all they want. I mean, that LSU team is, you know, a great team. They're on the road. You know, Joe Burrow and them, they hot. You know, yeah, they just put up almost 100 on Oklahoma. You know, they just, you know, it's just they years.
My point in playing that clip is what he says at the beginning, where he says, listen, I don't listen to outside the noise. That's just talk. Those aren't the people who are sort of sweating and bleeding for the team the way that I am right there. And if you're able to say that after a bad moment, and the SEC championship game unfortunately was, you're probably also capable of saying that after some good moments too. When everybody's patting you in the back and telling you how good you're supposed to be, blocking out that noise is just as important as blocking out the negative noise after a game against LSU. And it certainly seems like Monty Rice is going to be pretty good there in that regard, in a addition to being really good on the field there as well. So when Jake Fromm says people aren't paying enough attention to Monty Rice, I'd heed Jake Fromm's words on this, both in terms of an intangible quality off the field and certainly in a very tangible quality on the field. Monty Rice is going to be an extraordinarily important player for the 2020 Georgia defense. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and we're really glad to have you with us. Let me give a big shout-out to my friends at ESOG. You know, they're proud partners of UGA, which makes them really fun to do business with, Jay Derrick, the whole team over there, and they provide a valuable service. Let's face it, you're at home more right now. You kind of notice things around the house you otherwise wouldn't have noticed. Maybe you see some cracks in the foundation. Maybe you see some wet spots, damp areas kind of showing up, basement, crawl space, garage, something along those lines. These are things that need to be fixed. Now, sometimes it's not that hard to fix it. Sometimes it's as simple as sort of going by the hardware store and just getting some sort of little thing to help take care of all of that for you. And if that be the case, then ESOG will tell you to do just that. But when it comes to the structural integrity of your home, sometimes these fixes are more substantial. If that be the case, you want to trust Engineered Solutions of Georgia because they have two full-time engineers on staff. Now, the number to get in touch could not be easy to remember. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's right. Give them a call, 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Before I forget it, I do want to make one announcement. When I did video this morning, I forgot to say this. So tomorrow is a Wednesday. I'm actually taking a day off. I don't take a ton of days off. Need to take one tomorrow. So I will not be here for Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia tomorrow, but back on Thursday and then for the foreseeable future. Rare day off for us tomorrow. We will not be here on Wednesday, but we'll look forward to being back with you again shortly after that. I got a fun conversation with Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, I want to focus in on something, and this is a story at DogNation.com. It's really interesting about what Kirk Herbstreit, the ESPN analyst, said about Jake Fromm, but there's also something else that Herbstreit says here about the situation of at Georgia that I don't think you want to gloss over too much either. In speaking about what Jake Fromm can be as a quarterback at the NFL level, here's what Herbstreit said as quoted by Mike Griffith. He says, whoever gets him, meaning Jake Fromm, is going to get a gym rat type of guy and a guy that can do some exciting things. Herbstreit says, I'm a huge fan of his. I know that last year didn't go the way fans wanted, and I know that the quarterback gets too much credit and a lot of times too much blame. And he goes on to kind of sort of give his reasons why this might have happened. Herbstreit says, they didn't necessarily have the receiver play they had the past 2 years. This is from Mike Griffith's story at DogNation.com. When he was a freshman and sophomore, they weren't able to get the ball downfield in this offense. Let me read that sentence one more time. They weren't able to get the ball downfield in this offense. And if you're unsure of what he means by that, he would clarify. He goes on to say, this is Kirk Herbstreit, ESPN. I think eventually it caught up with them. I think they also reevaluated their offensive coordinator. They're going in a different direction, which I think maybe helps them moving forward. This is one of those things where it's kind of unpleasant to think about and yet undeniably true. I think the Georgia offensive scheme a year ago very much was a roadblock on Jake Fromm's development as a quarterback. When a guy is worse as a junior than he was as a sophomore, and in Jake's case, I think there was some regression, I think you've got to ask some tough questions about the role that the offense played in all of that. And Herbstreit acknowledges the role that the receiver situation kind of played in this too. And for some reason, once again, Herbstreit's words about the receiver seem to be getting more attention than the other part of this, which is after seeing the way that Jake Fromm played in 2019, after seeing the way the entirety of the Georgia offense played in 2019, as Herbstreit says it, Georgia decided to go in a different direction with its offense. And Herbstreit predicts they're going to be in better hands with Monken than they were with James Coley. This is the example of which when a famous guy says something bad about your team, in rare occasions, that actually might be kind of a good thing. In this case, Herbstreit's candor regarding what Georgia did not do a year ago offensively, I think, is a good thing. We need as many public reminders as possible. Those of us who are Georgia fans want the best for this team. We need as many public reminders as possible about what did happen with the offense a year ago. A faulty scheme put Georgia in some tough spots where they could not attack vertically down the field, and ultimately the entire offense kind of fell apart because of that. It's not always the most pleasant thing to revisit, but being matter-of-fact about what didn't happen a year ago, I think, is the best way to make sure the results are better this year. Kirby Smart's not going to necessarily be forthright on this, and it's his prerogative not to be. But for the media, the people who give opinions for a living, who watch this kind of stuff closely, Herb Street saying what he said in the piece at with Mike Griffith at DogNation.com, I think it's kind of actually a good thing. I think Herb Street's telling the truth here that a better offensive system would have led to a better year for Jake Fromm. You can't go back and undo that now, but you can lay better groundwork for the future, and hopefully Jamie Newman or whoever emerges as the Georgia quarterback, I think it will be Newman. Either way, I hope they benefit from a better offensive scheme from Todd Monken. I won't necessarily predict Joe Brady-like effect from Monken at Georgia the way that Brady enjoyed that LSU, but I think he's more qualified. I think he's more capable than Coley proved to be, and I think the Georgia offense will be in better hands with him. My name is Brandon Adams. As I said before, this Dog Nation Daily. We're presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. For more on what Fromm and DeAndre Swift, Isaiah Wilson, Andrew Thomas have had to say with us for the last couple of days, and some news on UGA recruiting, let's talk to Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Speaking of a terrific partner, I've obviously got one when it comes to our Dog Nation recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel. He joins us here right now on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG. And Jeff, I'll say good morning to you. Thanks for being with us live on video. There is obviously a lot of recruiting stuff I want to get into with you, but I think it'd be a mistake not to begin with what you and I have had a chance to experience over the last couple of days. On Monday, a chance to talk to Isaiah Wilson, DeAndre Swift, two former Georgia greats, guys that made significant contributions in a UGA uniform. And then going back on Friday, two of the real pillars of the early days of the Kirby Smart era, former quarterback Jake Fromm, the left tackle, the anchor, the bookend of the offensive line, Andrew Thomas. What was your big takeaway from getting a chance to speak to these four young men over the course of the last couple of days? I know you enjoyed it, but what did you get out of it?
Oh, first of all, good morning, Brandon. D&D, sponsored by ESOG with BA, covering UGA. I think I've got all my acronyms there. Man, you're speaking about DGDs there, Brandon, with Andrew and with DeAndre, Isaiah. I think the big takeaways is, you know, people's mileage will vary, I guess, on those interviews. Lots of people will say, what's the juice? What's the thing I want to know now? And a lot of folks would gravitate towards the comments that were made about Monty Rice and Jamari Salyer and Lewis Cine and James Cook and Zamir White. But I thought it was interesting how DeAndre Swift told us that his best moment at Georgia was that Notre Dame game his freshman year, when he only had like 40 yards rushing. He made one great explosive play and they won that game. He kept mentioning, Brandon, oh, that's, you know, this is the way he couched it. It's not the game when Georgia invaded South Bend. Oh, that's the game when Rodrigo got a scholarship and the team bonded and we had a real chemistry and a real brotherhood from that point on. I think that's when DeAndre felt like he was a part of the Georgia program, regardless of all the big stats that he was going to put up. I think that's a moment. And then DeAndre said something very telling as well, where he was just like, maybe one of the only true reporter questions I asked him I asked him, how's he feeling this draft stuff? I was like, does he care more about where he's getting picked, the salary slot, the fit, going to a big-time offense, where he's going to live? And he was basically had a human moment there. He said, man, I don't know. I don't know anything. I don't know where I'm going to live yet. And to me, that kind of showed a lot of the stresses that both of those young men are dealing with, including high-value draft picks like Isaiah and DeAndre and Andrew.
So one of the takeaways I had from talking to all four of these guys, all from the 2017 recruiting class, obviously when you and I get together, we talk about numbers and measurables. And on the measurable basis, the best this can be measured, the 2017 class is, I guess, what, only fourth best in the Kirby Smart era, 18, 19, 20, would all kind of rank above it in terms of the talent you collect. And yet you come back to, especially given the other names in the 17 class that are either still a part of the program or have been big-time contributors, there is something about that group that cannot be measured. It is an intangible thing. And when you get a chance to talk to Andrew Thomas on Friday and Jake Fromm on Friday, come back and talk to Isaiah and DeAndre on Monday, I think you're just sort of hit over the head, you know, by that fact once again of, man, this group is going to be really hard to replace. It seemed special at the time when all these guys signed, but part of that was because of how hungry Georgia fans were to have a truly elite class, whether the 17 class, ranked number 3 at the time, kind of was. But as more time passes, Jeff, a weird thing has happened. The class even seems more special than it did then, even though at the time it was heralded as the best class at that point in UGA history. But speaking to these four guys the last couple of days, you're just reminded and reinforced of just how difficult their spirit is going to be to replace as much as their talent.
I think one of the things that clearly you took away from, first of all, Jake, is it looked to me, Brian, I don't know what your thought was, but I don't know if some smart agent in Jimmy Sexton's camp or CAA had decided they were going to put a halo spotlight on Jake in front of his computer for all these draft interviews, because it really looked like the young man had a 1,000-megawatt smile and that spirit. I think when you see Andrew on the day-to-day, and then you saw that – Brandon, did you see that NFL.com tweet where he's playing the keyboard? There's a young lady next to him, and she's singing Beyonce's Halo. Yeah. I mean, if I'm Arthur Blank, or if I'm a millionaire, gajillionaire NFL owner, I'm sitting there watching that thinking, okay, we like this guy a lot, right? We have him as a top 10 pick, right? That's the guy I want to give $170 million of my money to over the next 10 years. I mean, Andrew, to me, seems like the perfect ideal professional, a future community leader type. He seems like a kid that's wired exactly the right way, where football's not too big, even though he's a tremendous player. What a professional football player should be like. And you want to talk about one of the safest investments right now if you're an NFL owner, giving those bucks, those mega bucks to Andrew Thomas, percussion, yeah. Pace Academy, three-year starter at Georgia, one of the best PFF pass protection grades whatsoever. He seems like very much a sure thing. And I always thought it was interesting, too. Isaiah was – it seems like all those guys in the ecosystem of Georgia football certainly played a unique and defined role. One of the things that I love to ask Isaiah about was, man, he just got into his celebrations and his touchdowns so much as a Georgia Bulldog.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like he was having as much fun as anybody out there.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's turn our attention here to recruiting. And obviously, Georgia got a big pickup on Sunday. Elijah Judy, the four-star edge rusher out of Philadelphia. Jeff and I got a chance to talk to Judy and had a chance to kind of study up on him even more than you already had. What do you make of his presence in the 2021 class? And kind of give us an idea of kind of what he means as a player right now.
I guess I'm going to start with some information that will catch your ear a little bit. He visited Florida late in the 2019 season. He got Florida in his top six back in December. Georgia's not even in there until they offer in January. He takes a visit about 2 weeks later. It is his only visit to Georgia. He moves up his timetable considerably, and he's a Bulldog basically within 4 months of his offer from the University of Georgia. He made a top six in December, Brandon. Georgia wasn't even in there. I think this is a very highly adaptable player. I think he's one of three outside linebacker targets they will take in this class. We're going to have a story coming up on Dog Nation today that I'm going to tell you, when I learn four or five things about a kid after an interview, that means I got to bring that to some folks on the DogNation.com webpage fairly shortly. And there's some things about Elijah Judy I can safely say that I've never written about quite as much before when it comes to a prospect, in terms of his versatility, the type of athlete he is, how much football matters. I mean, everybody sees his dad, and I think they always make that point about how much eligibility does he have left.
Sure.
I think he has 2 years of eligibility left, but Brandon, this is a guy that works as a corrections officer for his main source of income, and then he doubles as a bodyguard for hire to professionals and celebrities around the Philadelphia area. So, Brandon, when we're doing Marlowe's again and we're doing meet and greets or whatever, maybe we should consider a bodyguard for you now that you look sort of like a shady character with that beard, my man.
I got to tell you, as impressive as I think Elijah Judy is as a player, something about corrections officer by day, bodyguard of the stars by night, that seems like a Netflix series that I need to watch, or an HBO series right there. I feel like that's fertile soil for some pretty juicy drama on both those fronts.
Learned a little bit about it. The mother's a teacher. That's why Elijah has so much academic prowess. His sister is basically, I've been told, she's a budding R&B star, where she has incredible pipes. She has great vocal talent, great vocal range. You know, this is a kid that, you know, young men gush about. And one of the things that I've heard from some of the coaches in the Philadelphia area, when I kind of checked the tires on how good Elijah Judy was over the last couple of months, is they rave about Judy, but they also rave about, kind of tying in what our earlier topic was, Brandon. They said that Swift and Webb have established the blueprint for how you go about your business from the city of Philadelphia, and you get on your way, put yourself on the path to football stardom.
I got more questions for Jeff Sintel coming up here on Dog Nation Daily. I also want to remind you that, you know, a lot of UGA fans have great pride in their football team, but they also have great pride in the university itself. And given the challenges of what we're dealing with right now when it comes to COVID-19, the coronavirus, all that kind of stuff, I think the work being done by UGA, at UGA, in and around the campus has never been more important than it is right now. And our friends at the UGA Alumni Association are calling all dogs to help step up and support that. Now, there are four different ways you can do that. I want to make you aware of that. I'm going to give you a call to action here at the end. One of the things you can do is financially support the Student Emergency Fund. Think about the UGA students that right now find themselves in harm's way for a number of reasons, but specifically right now, maybe due to the coronavirus. The Student Emergency Fund gives you a chance to support them and just kind of help them stay on their feet as they work their way through school. You can also support UGA researchers who are doing the work necessary to maybe eventually lead to a COVID-19 vaccine. That's really important work. There's great scientific achievement happening on the UGA campus, and you can support those researchers with some valuable funds to help get that done. You can also become a UGA mentor for UGA students who may be in the midst of some professional confusion, just given the current state of what's going on in the classroom, the job market they may find themselves in once they're out of school. Being a mentor right now is an incredible thing to do to sort of help pass the baton to the next generation of UGA grads. You can also share your stories there online, too. And we can celebrate those who are on the front line battling against COVID-19. And, of course, so many of the UGA community doing that right now. So here is the website you can go to kind of get involved on this and help celebrate, honor, but also propel the work that the University of Georgia is doing to kind of make the world a better place in a post-COVID-19 world. It's alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. Of course, if you're watching on video, you can see this on your screen. I'll read it once again, though. alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. That'll get you in touch with the UGA Alumni Association, and you can support the great work this university is doing to help protected students, but also make the world a better place. And now, Jeff Sintel, getting back to the subject of recruiting here for a moment. Obviously, I love juicy recruiting rumors, and we got one here. Now, you can tell me how much this involves George or how much of this is just sort of a juicy rumor taking place outside the boundaries of UGA. But I believe it was TigerNet that had this first, TigerNet.com. Corey Foreman, very high profile, 2021 commit to the Clemson Tigers, had kind of a cryptic tweet the other day where it certainly seemed like he was leaning in the direction of a decommitment from Clemson. And I guess reporting coming out of Clemson on this lets us know that apparently Foreman wants to take his official visits, which is kind of the prerogative of a five-star. But as we've talked about a million times before, Dabo Swinney has kind of gotten away in the past with keeping his guys from doing that. He doesn't call you a Clemson commit. If you're visiting elsewhere, you can decide if that's a good idea or not, but that's Dabo's policy. Seems like, though, Foreman might be on his way back on the open market. So I'll ask you, given the need that Georgia has for these impressive defensive guys for the class of 2021, if Foreman is out there, is Georgia back in play again?
And the short answer there, Brandon, is no. I think Foreman's back in play, which brings a lot of schools back into play. I think if you were doing Dabo World Daily, Brandon, or Dabo Nation Daily, I think this would be some juicy content for you to think about, because let me frame it up in a way that you guys might not be able to understand. Talking about Corey Foreman here, Corey Foreman was the best defensive lineman at the opening last year as a junior. He was seen to be better than Brian Brzee, better than Javon Dexter, better than DeMonte Capehart. A lot of stellar, big-time five stars in the 2020 class. Corey Foreman is just a junior, class of 2021. And the decommitment watch is certainly happening right now, Brandon. And for Georgia fans to kind of weigh the significance of this, Corey Foreman's the number one player in the country. He is an impact-type defensive end. And this would have been like the decommitment watches or worries or pearl-clutching for Nolan Smith back in the day in the 2019 class. That's the seriousness of gravitas that it has towards the Foreman issue. But I think it goes a step further. This would be the first decommitment for Clemson and Dabo Swinney since 2015. So it would set a precedent a little bit that here's a guy that was all in with Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers. I think he even got a tattoo as well, an $800 tattoo of the Tigers on his body as well. and now he's wavering. So why is he wavering? I think it's a little bit of a gumbo with COVID-19. He wants to take his visits. He wants to stay closer to home. USC is putting on a big push with his inner circle. So I think all those things are happening with what's going on with Corey Foreman. Sure, Georgia would be one of the schools that get an official visit. Brandon, my big pushback on this story, though, is this is a young man that before he commits to Clemson, the rules are laid out. They say, hey, man, commit when you want to, but you're not going to take official visits after you commit. So if you want to take visits, go ahead and take those now before you commit to the Clemson Tigers. So when a young man, I think a lot of the Clemson folks I know, when a young man knows those parameters coming in and then has a second change of heart and says, no, I think I deserve my visits. I want to take my visits. I think that's what's interesting. Not so much as, oh my gosh, somebody doesn't like the Clemson Tiger program and is not all in from the jump.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, though, is that if Foreman committed and only to later find out, well, maybe I want to take my visits, then it sounds like, I'm not saying he's unhappy at Clemson. I'm just saying maybe he didn't do as much of his homework to make sure that this was truly the place that he wanted to be married to. And so from the standpoint, from that standpoint, it certainly seems like he's there for somebody to take. And that may not be, Georgia that can swoop in. But certainly it seems like the commitment to Clemson all the way, you know, when it was initially made was premature.
That's clear. I think the other thing to think about there is if he opens it back up, he'll take his five officials. The very likelihoods, there's really two paths, Brandon. One, the most likely thing for him to do now if he opens it back up is to take his five officials and maybe go back to Clemson in the end. That would be, Clemson's program didn't get any worse over COVID-19. But the thing that's starting to pop up here with even the crystal balls and your favorite online chatter is there's a true reality that USC will now swoop in and get him because there might just be a reality that he needs to be closer to home. He wants to play closer to home in this environment. I think USC is really one of the change agents for this decommitment here. I think Georgia will get a visit. I think Georgia will turn his head. But in the eventual long game here, Brandon, I would see Corey Foreman saying that he's still a better fit for Clemson than he is for Georgia if he's going cross country.
So this is a small point, and it doesn't really matter all that much, but I am kind of curious about this. I mean, if USC were to get Corey Foreman, that'd be the first recruiting win they've had since Pete Carroll was coaching there. I mean, do you really think they have the power, the wherewithal right now, even if they have a geographic advantage, to win a recruitment like that?
One of these kids have got to decide that they want to come back and play for USC. They've got a strong brand, Brandon. They might not have SEC facilities yet. They might not have the stadiums, the indoor practice facilities, the pageantry that a lot of these programs on the East Coast have. But it might be just a simple matter that it's going to be awful hard for the loved ones, Brandon, to go see him play every week. And that's something that's very simple that we live and breathe every day with players around the state of Georgia. I would simply think my thing on this happening is the young man just wants to take his visits, even in a world where maybe some folks would have a pause button there about, oh, I need to go visit five different regions in five different parts of the country via airlines right now. I just think he just wants to take his visits and focus on his senior season. But I would see him coming back to Clemson in the end.
Let me do one more thing before we let you go here. Obviously, Saturday, Kirby Smart was live tweeting the replay of the Georgia-Notre Dame game. We saw some interaction with recruits on that. Kirby can't obviously mention them by name. We saw James Williams get involved with that. I believe Barrett Carter did as well at one point in time. How effective do you think a live tweet Saturday from Kirby Smart is from a recruiting standpoint at a time there's not really much else sports-wise going on? How much do you think Smart's tweets got the attention of maybe more than just Carter and Williams?
Well, Brandon, I'm gonna tell you what I think happens here. I think there's some synergy with that in terms of real-time tweeting and communication. I would imagine, Brandon, let's just do this along with me right there. Wouldn't it odd that Kirby Smart sends out a tweet and these young people are aware of it and able to respond to it within, 20, 30 minutes after the tweet? I think there might be some synergy going on there
in terms of,
hey, man, pay attention to these tweets, man. I might be calling you out on one of these plays right here or something else like that. That's a way where maybe it's not so much fun for podcasters and the Dog Nation crowd out there. Maybe it's a way for these recruits to feel a little bit involved as well. And if you can't recruit them face-to-face and in the same room, then perhaps he can recruit them through a virtual G-Day. And I think, man, that game, the pageantry, everything everybody saw, it's still really hard to top in terms of an environment for college football. And it's this way, Brandon. You know, any publicity is good publicity, and that was great publicity for the University of Georgia. in a lane where, Brandon, you didn't see Clemson doing that. You didn't see Auburn doing that. You didn't see USC. You didn't see Ohio State doing that. Georgia kind of was the one that anchored itself to that. I think the only other program that I know that went through a similar machination or similar mimicry of let's redo this thing again, I think Nebraska was another school that did something else like that. I think Georgia was able, and maybe it wasn't a very crowded landscape, but Georgia was able to register with a lot of folks on that day regardless.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Jeff, I know you got a lot of great stuff coming up at DogNation.com this week, including another edition of Before the Hedge is presented by Kroger on Wednesday. Give us a little bit of preview for what the rest of the week's going to look like.
We're going to write a little bit more about those guys that I've had stories kind of tucked into my back pocket a little bit. We're going to write about Darren Branch. That's a part of the Georgia 2020 class. I don't think a lot of folks know a whole lot about Darren Branch. Sure. I'm going to bring back one of them out of the vault, Brandon. There was a story Mike Ritt wrote this week about N'Kobe Dean. And I thought to myself, you know, there's a couple of things that we didn't write about N'Kobe Dean prior to his enrollment and him playing at the University of Georgia. And now with N'Kobe moving into kind of a star turn at Georgia, a starring role at Georgia, I think it's time to share some of those things and get excited about what type of player and person N'Kobe Dean is. Aside from that, Brandon, I will call everybody's attention back to what Isaiah Wilson said yesterday about Georgia's tackles, Georgia's outside linebackers. I also want to write something about the Wolfpack pretty soon because Elijah Judy's the newest member. But I want folks to know that Georgia definitely has as good an outside linebacker room as anyone else in the country right now.
Looking forward to reading that. Jeff, thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We'll enjoy reading you, watching you, and everything else in between. Of course, here talking to you on Dog Nation Daily again very soon as well.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from Jeff Sintel. As we transition here to our SEC Through, before we get into the SEC news, and I've got some really good stuff from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on football's eventual return that I want to get to here in a moment. Before we get to that, let me say a big thank you to the great response we've had thus far to the project we're teaming up with our friends from Sock Fancy on. You know, Sock Fancy is a subscription-based sock company. Stefan, the co-founder CEO, is a UGA grad. He's one of the guys that's running that, and I had a chance to interview him for a story that maybe you had a chance to read at DogNation.com going back to Sunday. I like the company, and I love what they're doing right now, where they've just kind of transformed their manufacturing outfit, and they're now producing masks. Now, masks are important because, listen, as we kind of get back to normal and sort of get back out into life a little bit more, when you're going to the supermarket and things like that, you're probably seeing more masks. And as businesses reopen, restaurants reopen, people start going out more, we're still going to need to socially distance ourselves. We're still going to need to take precautions. And masks are kind of a way that can be done. And what Sock Fancy is making is in accordance with like the recent CDC guidelines. And so you can go to sockfancy.com/masks, use the promo code DogNation, and purchase a mask for you to wear. They're really stylish. They look great. And they will kind of, they're not like N95 masks or whatever, but they're facial coverings that kind of keep you from breathing on other people and kind of protect the public and keep everybody safe. It's a really important thing to be doing right now. You get 10% off your purchase when you go to sockfancy.com/masks and use the promo code DogNation. Now, in addition to that, for every mask sold, Sock Fancy is also going to donate a mask to an organization in need. And we here at Dog Nation were able to team up with Sock Fancy and say, we're going to have some say in where the masks our people buy, where they're sent to. And we said daycare centers in Georgia right now are performing such an important service because they're really providing a service to the essential workers who are out there and doing big things for our state. And by the way, all work is essential when it comes to putting food on your family's table and taking care of you and yours. And the daycare centers for the people who have no other alternative for their children are incredibly important. So our daycare centers are really at the center of our state's battle against the coronavirus right now. So we want to make sure they have masks. So for every mask purchased from Sock Fancy, one's going to be donated to a daycare center or a similar facility around the state of Georgia. I think that's a really good thing. So sockfancy.com/masks. Use the promo code DogNation. That promo code not only saves you 10%, but it helps Sock Fancy know where to direct the masks that are going to be donated. And those associated with Dog Nation are going to some daycare centers around the state of Georgia. So there are a couple things that Greg Sankey said the other day that haven't gotten a ton of attention, but I think it's actually really good stuff from Sankey. It made an appearance on the Knoxville radio station, the Sports Animal, WNML. asked about the coronavirus, said two things I think you got to look at here. The first thing is, in terms of when a decision that needs to be made, he said the beauty of it's still April. I don't have to answer that question right now. I think one of the great learning experiences that I have enjoyed, if there's such a thing as enjoying the last 30 days, is how much we've learned over that period of time. As we've talked to researchers and physicians, their encouragement has been that we've learned a lot. We will learn a lot. We should wait to make major decisions. I've avoided the hypotheticals and tried to prepare for what's in front of me right now. I love that from Sankey because there's so many voices in the media just on the basis of a lack of content right now, which are pushing sports officials into trying to make statements, make announcements way before they need to be made. And the more prone to panic officials, the more prone to bend in the direction of public opinion, you see the kind of what I would think of in some cases as weaker leaders in sports who kind of bow to that pressure. And frankly, I think they've caused unnecessary problems for themselves. The fact that Sankey avoids that, I think it's a really good thing. And here's the other thing. This is the big thing from Sankey that has not gotten a ton of attention from his radio interview, but I think it's worth noticing. In terms of how the SEC might proceed eventually different than other leagues, here's what Greg Sankey told WNML. If you look back when we were deciding how to approach the basketball tournaments, each of those decisions was an independent decision made by a conference. You saw the Ivy League make a decision on Tuesday. We made a decision to cancel our event based on new information on Thursday. There's probably a lesson or example in the fact that we are independent entities. Boy, I love that from Greg Sankey. Part of what's now happened since that time is there's a lot of conversation, certainly among the autonomy conferences, and he mentioned some of those leagues. I like that from Greg Sankey. I think Sankey's earned a lot of respect from me throughout the way that he's handled the coronavirus. I think very similar to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, who I've been very complimentary of. And I love the idea of the SEC leaning in the direction of its autonomy right now. I think that's the right way to play this if the SEC. California wants to do things one way. New York wants to do things another way. There's no reason why everybody has to be carbon copy cookie cutter on all of this. The SEC can make its evaluation on the basis of what's going on in those states. And as Sankey says, those decisions don't have to come anytime soon. We're still in April, after all. Really good stuff, I think, from Commissioner Greg Sankey. By the way, as we're wrapping up here today, I told our video audience earlier, I watched that movie. Have you seen this Crawl? I don't watch a lot of scary movies. This one was too scary for me. All these alligators kind of turn loose in a house and kind of community, as Florida was dealing with sort of a fictitious hurricane. It's a made-up move, but it's really scary. All the reinforcement I need of what a vile creature an alligator is, an awful thing that is to have as your mascot, reinforcing my hatred for those lousy, stinking gators, making me more proud than ever to say Gatorator Updater 1,270 days. We'll see you Thursday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.